As listeners to this show know, I'm always interested in companies that want to provide independent artists with options for new revenue streams and new types of funding. Welcome to The Future of What. I'm Portia Sabin, president of the Music Business Association. On today's episode, we talk to a couple of companies who have entered the marketplace recently to provide artists with some of these funding options. It's all coming up on The Future of What.
Can I have a taste of your ice cream? Can I lick the crumbs from your table? Can I interfere in your crisis? No, mind your own business. No, mind your own business.
My guest today is Nick Struzenski. He is the founder of Vault. Nick, welcome to The Future of What.
Thanks, Portia. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. So I guess we're going to dive right in and get you to tell us exactly what Vault is and what it does. You guys are pretty new in the marketplace, but I'm excited to hear about it. It sounds like a cool idea.
Yeah. We started a little under a year ago. Vault is essentially a bespoke catalog brokerage and artist funding service. So we help artists and rights holders through the funding process. Most likely that's a catalog sale, and we kind of act as a stand-in manager through the process. But we've also helped artists secure distribution deals, find their next label partner. Artist funding is our specialty, and we do a lot of things that kind of fall under that umbrella.
Awesome. Like, can you describe like one transaction, for example, that is for artist funding?
Yeah. So the main focus has been catalog sales. So helping artists, mostly independent, some major label artists, sell their rights or a portion of their rights. So the process is getting with them and kind of figuring out what the catalog's worth, doing a preliminary valuation, pitching them to buyers, which are typically catalog funds or some small hedge funds, and then negotiating and helping with the closing process on their behalf. The catalog sales that we've done, you know, for example, if it's an artist that's distributing their music through DistroKid, the buyer, the catalog fund, will quite literally take over that account. I've also done cases where an artist has been signed to a major label, and the catalog fund is acquiring that income stream by way of LOD.
You know, I find it really interesting because the last few years have really opened a lot of doors in the music industry for new ways for artists to get funded. A lot of companies have sprung up, you know, seeing this as an area of, you know, like where there's an actual need. You know, I think companies that can help artists get money, which the artist generally needs to continue being an artist, right? Like they need that money to put into new recordings, new videos, new publicity, whatever it is that they're currently working on. And so, you know, it's quite interesting that you guys are taking, there's many companies that are doing it from the sort of the more of the frontline stuff where they take a portion of, let's say, digital royalties. You know, that's one example of how folks are funding artists, you know, giving them sort of micro loans up front on, you know, against digital income in the future. But you guys are helping with catalog sales. So what have you found in terms of, you know, the size of the artist that you need to deal with? Can it be a relatively new artist with, you know, a lot of songs, or do they have to be a certain sort of size?
Yeah. So for the case of catalog sales, I mean, I'll help any artist. I would say that the larger the catalog, typically the more buyers are interested. And to that regard, the older the catalog, the more buyers are interested. The minimum thresholds for, like, you know, a full sale would probably be somewhere over 100K annually. So they need to be earning that across publishing, master, and SoundExchange or PRO. And then the vintage, typically, you know, buyers like to see records out for at least 3 to 5 years. But the older the catalog, typically the higher multiple is what I've seen.
Got it. And what do you find artists are using this money for that you guys are able to help them get out of their catalog sale?
A number of things. I would say most of the artists that I've worked with have other business ventures, whether it be real estate or maybe they're trying to start a label. So typically the money is going into another venture. In one case, you know, I've seen artists have IRS issues, so they need to sell a portion of the catalog to cover a tax issue. But for the most part, I'm working with artists that have other ventures and they're looking to invest this money into something outside of their music career.
That's really interesting. So you came to Vault from a finance background, but you also worked at a record label for a while. So have you always been a big music fan?
Yeah, I've been a music head my entire life. music has always been sort of the through line in all of my great relationships, friendships, and relationships with the family, bonding over music and going to concerts and blasting music in the car. And then I also played jazz piano from a young age. And I think that's what really, you know, taking piano lessons starting at age six really kind of made me into the music person that I am today. And the catalog world is sort of an interesting pivot because it's kind of a way that I've been able to marry the skill sets from my finance background, and also the label A&R side. I love kind of like the entrepreneurial journey of getting to run and grow a business. But at times I do kind of miss the creative elements of working for a label and working in A&R.
Yeah, I do too. I ran a label for 13 years and there are days where I'm like, oh, you know, that there were some real fun things about the creative aspect of that. Although I have been finding in, you know, the music business world that there is so much creativity. I mean, your company is just one example, but you know, it takes a lot of creativity to think about the problems that exist in the industry and then a way to genuinely solve them.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there's, you know, our industry is so disjointed. You know, for example, I was reading an article this morning on Music Business Worldwide about how segmented the sync industry is. And, you know, for such a growing segment of the business, the process of getting approvals on sync licensing is quite hectic. I just, you know, every day I'm coming up with more solutions to new problems that I'm reading about. And yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting kind of like solving this problem of in the funding space is kind of getting my mind thinking about other problems outside of that. But yeah, it's really, you know, for me, it's really fun to think about and brainstorm myself and idea about different problems that I could help solve.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's funny because I will put you in touch with, I just met someone who is working on exactly that, the problem of sync and, you know, getting approvals and across so many different folks. So it's really funny. You know, I think it's great because I feel like there was a moment there a few years ago where people were coming into the music marketplace, but they didn't understand our problems. Mm. And so they were trying to solve stuff for stuff that just wasn't a problem. And I think that was tough for people like me who've been around a long time because it kind of made us wary of new tech solutions. And so I've been overjoyed in the last 5 or 6 years that so many people are coming in. Because I think that, you know, the deal with the music industry is you have to have respect for it. Like, listen, we're not perfect. And, you know, there's messy stuff. Sync is a great example. Publishing, you know, there's just so much stuff to understand about the industry. But if you take the time to understand it, you can actually, you know, come up with some great solutions. And I just feel like, yeah, this last few years has been just very exciting because I feel like we're solving a lot of the problems that have lasted in the industry for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think we have like emerging technology like blockchain to thank for that. But it still seems like, you know, the application for blockchain and Web3 is kind of far beyond what it's actually being used for today, which is just seemingly NFTs. I don't think that there's many companies that have like really figured out how to use these emerging technologies the most effectively. I think it's still a work in progress.
Yeah. And I think we've seen a lot of advances using just the regular old technology that we have. You know, I think people have like you have really done a great job of finding solutions within the parameters of what we're already using, just thinking about it in a different way, you know, maybe with an outside perspective.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I don't think the wheel always needs to be reinvented.
Exactly. So what's next for Vault? You guys are really a young company. You've only been around about 11 months. So what are you looking at doing next?
Yeah. So I tell people that my vision for the company is figuring out the future of artist funding. What that looks like in practice is still a work in progress. What I would love to do is kind of change the way how we fund artists. Not necessarily using any new technology or platforms, but kind of changing the way deals are structured. I'm really interested in kind of the process of investing in an artist like a startup and taking an equity stake over their whole portfolio rather than ownership of the music. And I have a plethora of reasons of why I think that that's the most effective way to invest and grow an artist. But I think that probably is the next step for Vault, is figuring out how to restructure deals and grow artists kind of more sustainably.
What do you think about companies that have come into the marketplace recently, like Jukebox, where, you know, they're basically trading shares of artists?
I think it's super interesting. I think that I don't yet have a clear enough picture of kind of what the market is for Jukebox and what they're looking to do. But I'm really interested in the platform, and the team that they have there is exceptional.
Yes, for sure.
I think that's a whole nother, you know, side of the market where you can have fans that are actually investing in artists by buying, you know, fractionalized shares of songs or music portfolios. That seems to be really, really interesting to me.
Yeah. I think anything that allows fans to get more involved with the artists that they love is really quite an interesting idea that really sort of hasn't been explored in the past. So that's another exciting place to go, I think, in our future.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we kind of saw it with NFTs, but kind of all the traction and all the hype didn't seem to sustain. But that, I mean, as a fan, you know, to be able to have a direct line to the artist that I love, that's just such a cool concept.
Absolutely. And I think that's been the real perk of the internet, because, you know, I would say the internet has had a couple of significant downsides for the music industry, but that connection is definitely one of the upsides.
Yeah.
Well, Nick Straczynski, thank you so much for being with me today on The Future of What.
Thanks so much, Portia. It was great to chat with you.
You're listening to The Future of What. Follow us on all platforms at Music Biz Assoc, A-S-S-O-C, to find out more about Music Biz and hear about what's coming up next. My guest today is Matthew Tilley. He is the head of artist and industry development at BeatBread. Matthew, welcome to The Future of What.
The future of what? What? I'm fascinated to know what is. We'll find out, I guess. Hi, well, Portia, exactly. And hello to everybody who's listening.
Hi. Yeah, I called the show The Future of What because it just seemed so perfect for the music industry. What the hell's going on here, basically?
We've all asked ourselves what a few times, haven't we?
Exactly. Well, on today's show, we are talking about alternative funding sources for artists. And, you know, I absolutely love this. I love what has happened in the industry in the last several years, where so many companies have come in who really have good solutions to issues that actually are, you know, relevant to the industry. It's not like the old days where people were constantly trying to solve problems that we didn't have, you know, which was really annoying for those of us in the industry.
Yes. Things have opened up quite a lot, I would say.
Absolutely. So why don't you just get us started by telling us what BeatBread does?
Yeah. I mean, in a word, funding, right? I actually like to tell people what we're not. We're not a label. We're not a distributor. And we don't offer any services. And that's not because we don't think services are important. We think services are really important, but we know that that's not where we want to specialize. We want to specialize purely in the funding part. And that could be funding for artists, could be funding for labels, could be funding for distributors. We have a bunch of different solutions. And it's all based on data science. Some people think that's very unsexy. We think it's actually pretty sexy because you can get some amazing predictions and some amazing accuracy rather than a bunch of guesswork. But yeah, it's a artificial intelligence, machine learning, data-driven funding platform is the sort of slightly dull way to describe it.
I love it. Well, you know, I love metadata.
Who doesn't, Portia?
Who doesn't? I know it's the least sexy part of the music industry, but it's probably the most important these days. So you guys provide artists with funding based on machine learning. And, you know, what are you guys finding that artists are approaching you that they want to do with this money?
I mean, generally, marketing their project is the number one answer, right? Mm. And to be clear and to make a little differentiation for a second, Portia, we like to think of ourselves as working capital for artists. Again, sort of a business term, right? More of a financing term. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of headlines around at the moment about selling catalogs and, you know, Bruce Springsteen got this and Billy Joel got that. That end of life sort of giant check sale of catalog is not the business we're in currently.
True.
We may diversify into that. We're much more aimed at, as I said, working capital for artists, which means often funding for their next project, funding for their next tour, funding for the thing they see in the next few years in front of them. And to that end, we give these very flexible options, right? So one of the main options we offer is how long do they want their funding term to last? And they can pick anything between 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, or now we have a 20-year option as well.
Oh,
so
wow.
we're purchasing their revenue for a period of time. That's how the contract's constructed. And it is intended to be that funding solution that allows you to go invest in your career without, most importantly, without giving up any rights, right? We, as I said, it's a purchase of revenue. We don't take any ownership. We don't license the music. We're literally purchasing your revenue in advance. And add to that, we don't have to purchase all of your revenue. If you need to keep some to pay the rent or buy the groceries or whatever that is, we give you that option as well. So hopefully a very flexible solution.
I think that's so important too, because, you know, when I came into the industry 20 plus years ago, it was still possible to be sort of a working artist, a working class artist, you know, someone who didn't make hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but made enough to do exactly as you said, pay the rent, keep the lights on and buy groceries and tour, you know, 4 to 6 months out of the year. And, you know, it was possible to be that sort of working class artist. And I feel like we lost that for a minute in the digital age, when in the beginning of the digital age, because the funding, just sort of the revenue model changed so drastically. So that's what's so exciting about seeing companies like BeatBread come into the marketplace, because now it's, you know, it's bringing that middle class back.
Yeah, so I'll just talk a bit about the data that we saw that was one of these sort of inspirations to start the company, Portia. So obviously, if you go back, you know, 20 years to a pure pre-streaming age, really, unless you were signed to a label, you didn't have a chance of making a living from your music, right? It was about having records on the radio and CDs in Walmart or Target or Tower Records, or I'm really dating myself, but that was the game, right? Then if you go back about 10 years, you'll see about 10,000 artists starting to make a living from streaming. So, and by a living, I'm saying $50,000 a year or more from their recorded music, right? So again, 10 years ago, about 10,000 of those artists. Today, about 25,000 artists making $50,000 a year or more from their recorded music. And by the end of this decade, that's forecast to be somewhere between 50 and 60,000 artists.
Wow.
Again, making $50,000 a year or more, and some making a lot more, by the way, from their recorded music. And that's not counting merch and touring and all those other things. So that was part of the inspiration to say, you know, there's this massive middle class of artists coming along. Traditionally, they'd go to the labels for services and for funding, right? But most of the artists who've figured out a career don't need the services. They've figured out partners to work with, or they figured out how to do it themselves. What a lot of them need is just the funding to get them to that next level. And that was sort of the inspiration behind starting the company.
Exactly. And that's so fascinating. So do you guys have like a particular trick that you do? I mean, it's a very straightforward contract. You know, we take this percentage of your revenue for this period of time. You know, are there any like secret sauce pieces to BeatBread that we need to know about?
The secret sauce is the data science, right? So our head of data science had never worked in the music business before. He'd built a model modeling algorithms in energy markets and insurance markets and all these things. Well, it turns out that if you have enough data, you can pretty much model anything, right? So we bought a giant data set from Luminate at the beginning and sent him and a couple of his team off to see if they could model streaming behavior. And the answer they came back with was actually, yes, they can. Now, what that means is, instead of guessing how some tracks are going to perform over the next however many years, we actually have a pretty good way of predicting what that's going to be, which means that unlike a traditional record label, where unfortunately a lot of their deals lose money, and so they have to take the lion's share of the revenue on each deal so that the one or two that do make money, they pay for the losers, we pretty much don't have any losers, right? So we have a data model that's based on 200,000 artists and about 20 million tracks. And we actually, for any particular artist, forecast on a track by track level. So we literally forecast what every single one of their tracks is going to do over the next 20 years. And in most cases, it's about forecasting degradation, right? Because any track that's been out for more than a few months is likely going to go down over time. So it's really about forecasting how it's going to degrade over time. Data science is the sort of the secret sauce that's at the heart of it. Again, not very sexy, but we think it produces sexy outcomes and that we're able to offer much better deals than a traditional label might, where they, you know, they want to take ownership of the music and maybe offer you a 20% royalty rate and those kinds of things. We're offering something a lot more flexible, a lot more favorable, and that leaves the artist with ownership and in control of the situation.
I love that too, because it's flying in the face of the current, you know, pie in the sky vision that I think a lot of artists have, which is like, what I really need is a viral hit, you know, and as you just pointed out, you know, the vast majority of tracks are going to degrade over time. This viral hit situation is like, you know, it's the getting struck by lightning of, you know, 2024.
Yeah. And just to be really clear, Portia, we're not anti-major in any way. I still think, you know, if you think about an artist's career in terms of 0 to 30 miles an hour, 30 to 60 miles an hour, and 60 to 90 miles an hour, the 60 to 90 bit, there's no better place to be than a major label. But that's some pretty rarefied air, right? That's the chance of you getting to that point. It gets slimmer and slimmer the further up the speedometer you go, right? So I would always argue to an artist these days, if you can get yourself to 60 on your own, which there's plenty of people that can do, then go to a major, but you'll get so much better terms than if you show up to them when you're still doing 30 miles an hour.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. So tell me, is there a minimum amount per month that an artist needs to make in order to work with Beatbread?
Yeah, so about $100 a month in streaming income, which roughly is going to equate to about 10,000 monthly listeners on Spotify for most people. Wow. Now, bear in mind, we advance against income, right? So if you're making $100 a month, the advance ranges we're going to offer you are in the thousands of dollars. 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 10,000, depending on the term you choose, right? By the way, we do lots of those deals all the time, and lots of artists are delighted because they can buy themselves that new laptop, or they can buy some beats, or one guy relocated to Nashville with a check he got from us. You know, we're happy to do those small deals. And then obviously it goes up from there, and we've done deals in the millions as well. But yeah, the baseline is about that. You need to be making about $100 a month.
I love that, because that really does open it up to folks who are, you know, sort of still at that entry level, but have the potential to grow, and then your funding can help them actually grow. I mean, I'm 100% on board with this. I ran a record label for 13 years, an independent label. And honestly, as the digital age progressed, it became so much harder to do the same type of job that we used to do, because really you're taking bets on unknown artists. You know, that's sort of how the independent label sector works, is you tend to be taking bets on unknown artists. And you know, if you lose more of those bets than you win, that's not a great prognosis for your business over time.
Right. So we have a couple of situations recently, Portia, where we're sort of enabling mostly ex-label people, but actually some managers as well, who are realizing that management and label of kind of melding into one these days. And so we're helping people create these sort of mini indies. And so what'll happen is you just have, you know, a guy or a gal who's like, I know how to break artists. I'm looking at this artist. They bring us the artist, bring us the data. We run the numbers. We make offers. The guy or gal in question signs that label to their sort of servicing facility, and then immediately signs a deal with us. We fund that artist. So we make the advance to the artist, and often some of it goes towards marketing as well. And they're off and running. And so they've basically just started a label without having to put up any capital, because we're putting up the capital to fund it. And so we're essentially taking the risk, and they're going off and helping that artist build the next stage of their career.
That is very exciting. That is really cool.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the future, right? There's so many of these independent artists now who are just looking for the right team to help them. And if we can enable that by funding either the artist directly or funding the partner they're going to work with, that seems to be a great way to really help this middle class grow into the next phase of their career.
Well, that is very exciting. Matthew Tilley, he is the head of artist and industry development at Beatbread. Matthew, thanks for being with me today on The Future of What?
You're very welcome. Always a pleasure.
And that's our show. Our theme song is Mind Your Own Business by the Delta 5 and is played by permission. Subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. Today's show was engineered by Chandler Maynard at Relationary Marketing in Nashville and was produced by Dana Rogers and Henrik Bick. I'm Portia Sabin, president of the Music Business Association. See you next time.
Can I have a taste of your ice cream?